Hello. Can everyone hear me all right? I see that Lynn can see me. Can anybody else see me? I have my new webcam, and I thought that since I have it, I will use it. I've been in the room a couple times before when other people were using their webcam, and I enjoyed being able to see them. So, I thought I would go ahead and turn mine on now that I have one. I haven't had a webcam until just a couple of days ago. And I think you have to have a blue name in order to see me. So it looks like only a handful of people can actually see me. You do need to upgrade to see me. But don't worry, I look the same as I always do. Teddy Poppy. I hope you're listening. Are you listening? Can you say yes if you're listening? Okay, I want to say I love you. I heard a rumor today that maybe you didn't know that. So I'm going to stand here in front of how many people are in the room? 47 people right now, and no telling who's on the radio and who will be listening to the recording. I want to say I love Teddy Poppy, and I always have, and there has never been a single solitary moment when I didn't. So hopefully you heard that message loud and clear. Now everybody's typing in the room that they love Teddy. That's great. In fact, Teddy, can you see me? Do you have a, oh, you don't have a blue name. You can't see me, Teddy, because I'm wearing the sweater you got me. There's a few people. Wait, where's the camera? There's a few people that can see it. This sweater, Teddy got me. I wear it quite often, actually. So yeah. Okay, well, as Dove mentioned, I have an announcement to make, and the announcement actually has several pieces to it. It's not like it's not like it's going to take me a minute to tell you. It's going to take a bit of time. Hopefully you can stay for at least half an hour if you're in the room. I think probably by half an hour, all of the most important information will be shared. But I think what I want to do first is play a song. And the reason I want to play a song is just to have a few moments of silence while listening to some music. This will be my first time playing a song with a new mic. So if you guys could also, when I start playing the song, if you could let me know how the music sounds, and I'll see if I can adjust, if I need to adjust. Let's see, what song do we want to play? Well, the first one that my eyes landed on was The Voice Within by Christina Aguilera. So let me play that, and we'll just have a few moments of being still and listening to the music, but let me know how the volume is.
I'll be ready when your world starts to fall. Young girl, it's all right. Your tears will dry. You'll soon be free to fly. When you stay inside your room, you'll tend to dream of a place where nothing's harder than it seems. No one ever wants to bother to explain of the heart we like can't bring us what it means. When there's no one else, look inside yourself. Try the noise with me, then you'll find the strength that will guide your way. You'll have to begin to trust the voice with me. Oh, young girl,
Okay, there's more songs that want to play themselves, but I'm going to stop it there. some of you have noticed I've been having a conversation on the board with somebody named Misty62. And I think I came in here to make a different announcement tonight, but I think the one I'm about to make might thrill some of you even more than what I came here to say. So I'd like to introduce you all to Misty62. That is Brent Haskell and his beautiful wife, Sydney. they're in Pal Talk for the very first time. So so there they are. I know you guys know who Brent Haskell is. Yeah, Brent and his wife, Sydney, are a part of our local Course in Miracles group. We meet about monthly, and we're not a weekly group. They have to drive up from Canyon City, which is about 30 miles away from where I am. It's about an hour for them to get to where we meet. And last night, we talked a little bit about Pal Talk, and I didn't really expect them to be here tonight, but here they are. What a wonderful surprise. So welcome, Brent and Sydney. We're thrilled that you're here. I'm here tonight to talk about awakening together. And I'm just going to go ahead and tell it to you in story form. I'm going to tell it to you the way that it has unfolded. For me, the story started in about mid-December of this year, which Brent pointed out to me last night was the end of my year of silence. I hadn't really connected that, but it was the end of my year of silence. And I always hesitate before I start the story, because the truth is, the beginning of this story, I experienced a lot of resistance. And somehow, even when I retell the story, a bit of that resistance still comes back. So I have a little bit of trouble getting going. In mid-December, a vision, and I'm not talking about some, you know, woohoo spiritual vision, just, you know, a vision like, you know, like the leader of an organization will have a vision for his or her organization. A vision was born in me. And the vision was to start a new online church that was not based on any specific spiritual path. So, for example, not based on NTI, not based on A Course in Miracles, not based on any specific spiritual path, but inclusive of all forms of wisdom, inclusive of all cultures, you know, like the Hindu culture, the Christian culture, the Jewish culture, the Buddhist culture, but still clearly focused on one wisdom. So for me, what's a little bit different about this new church, and I'll talk more about the word church in a moment, but what's different about this new church than, for example, Unitarian Universalist, because Unitarian Universalist is also very, very open to all cultures and all spiritual paths. But what's different about the Unitarian Universalist church is it's not centered on one wisdom. So you can have people sitting next to each other in a Unitarian Universalist church with completely different purposes, completely different belief systems. You'll have people that will believe in, you know, the divine in some form. You'll have people that believe that, you know, Jesus was the Savior, next to people who don't believe that Jesus was the Savior, next to people who perceive themselves as atheists, next to people who, you know, really think you're born, you live a life and you die and that's it. But they want to live a good life. And that's what attracted them to Unitarian Universalist. It was the church for them. There's no central wisdom that necessarily joins the people. Now, sometimes if you go to a local Unitarian Universalist church within a local group, they will have found something that joins them. But the Unitarian Universalist church itself accepts everything. And the vision that I felt was a vision that still is focused on one wisdom, one inner wisdom. The people who feel to be a part of this would feel very joined through this inner wisdom, regardless of their spiritual path, regardless of their religious background, and regardless of their culture. Now, I mentioned that I had a lot of resistance when this vision came, and the resistance came from the idea of church. In fact, it was so strong, I think I may have even said, you know, to someone, maybe to Danielle, who lives here with me, it seems like I said, you know, it might have actually been Jacqueline and Tom I said this to, but I said to someone, you know, the one thing I didn't want to do in this lifetime was start a church. It's like that's the last friggin' thing I wanted to do. So one day the idea occurred to me to look up the word church, not the dictionary definition of the word church, but to look up where the word came from, because I already knew that, you know, I already knew that in the Bible, the word church seems to appear when Jesus is asking the apostles, who am I? and they have their various answers. And then Peter says, you know, you are the Christ. And Jesus tells him that, you know, you did not learn that from men, right? He recognizes that Peter was listening within. And he says that it's on this rock, Peter, that I shall build my church. And I knew that, you know, Jewish people would not have gone to a church. They would have gone to a synagogue. So I got curious, you know, did Jesus like make up a whole new word there? or what is this word church that Jesus used in that discussion? So I went and I looked it up and I found that the word church was actually translated from a Greek word. And I hope I say the word right, but if not, hopefully you'll get it. Ecclesiastia. And that word means an assembly of people with a common purpose. I'm going to write that in the room. An assembly of people with a common purpose. Now that makes my heart sing. The word church, you know, any resistance I have to the word church has to do with other ideas and but that, an assembly of people with a common purpose, that makes my heart sing. And in fact, as soon as I found out that the definition was an assembly of people with a common purpose, a purpose statement came into my mind. In fact, I was standing in the kitchen with Danielle, and I just started writing it out on a piece of paper, and I showed her, and she said, I love it. And so that became the purpose statement. Now, originally, we didn't have a name, so the name has been added to the purpose statement. The name came later. But let me go ahead and put the purpose statement in the room, and then I'll read it to you. The purpose is, well, actually, the way the purpose reads, this is from the Constitution, which I'll talk about a little bit later. The Constitution is a little more formal. The way the purpose typically reads is, we are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols. We seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. And since I told you how the vision came, right, you can tell that these couple of sentences capture that vision as a purpose perfectly. I'll read it one more time. We are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols. We seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. Once this purpose came, the next thing I knew that I needed to do, churches are required to have, and I had this information, believe it or not, because of my friend John Troy. Some of you may know him, but I was once in a conversation with John Troy, and he mentioned to me that churches have to have articles of faith, or he may have used a different word. He may have said tenets or something like that, but he let me know that that had to be a part of a church. And I went and I looked online. I looked at Unitarians, Unitarian Universalists articles of faith. I looked at Unities. I looked at the Catholic articles of faith. And I realized they don't always have to be called articles of faith, but they are indeed a component. What I ended up deciding to call them were core values rather than articles of faith. And these are five core values that are a part of this assembly. And also, each core value comes with how we live that core value. Because to be honest, core values are worthless if you don't live them. So with each core value, I also wrote a statement of how we live these core values. So let me share these core values with you because they are what came next. the first core value. We trust everyone is led by unique inner guidance to one experience called awakening, which is realization of one true self. We live this value by supporting one another on different paths of awakening. So it is a strong part of my vision that even though anyone who chooses to be a member of this assembly, and by the way, we don't use the word church anymore. I will only use the word church later when I'm talking about some legal matters, but we call ourselves an assembly. An assembly is that gathering of people joined in common purpose. So I have a strong vision that one of the purposes of this assembly is for all of us to support one another. Again, you know, some of the people that choose to join the assembly may feel really called to a Buddhist path. Certainly many will feel really called to A Course in Miracles. Some may be Advaita Vedanta. Some may be listening to their own inner wisdom, which seems to be expressing itself in a new and unique way, although it's the same inner wisdom. The expression may seem new. What I see in this organization is an organization where we all trust God enough that we know God or Holy Spirit can reach every one of us in an absolutely perfect way, and that one person does not have to be reached or led in exactly the same way as another person. We trust God enough to allow each other to follow apparently different paths and to support each other in their guidance. So I do not see this organization as an organization where we're debating, for example, is the Buddhist path better than A Course in Miracles, or is A Course in Miracles better than Advaita Vedanta? I see this organization as an organization that accepts each one is led, and we support each one in the way that they are led. It's a supportive organization. And in fact, it seems to me that as we support one another, not only are we helpful to the one that we support, but whenever we are being supportive, we are helping ourselves. Because again, in order to support another person in what appears to be a slightly or a very different path, it takes an awful lot of trust in God. And so whenever you choose to support someone that seems to be on an apparently different path, you are embracing, encouraging, increasing your own trust in God. So you actually support yourself as you support another. All right, so that's the first value. We trust everyone is led by unique inner guidance to one experience called awakening, which is realization of one true self. We live this value by supporting one another on different paths of awakening. All right, let's go to the second core value. We realize everyone is equal, and no one has been given spiritual intuition that is an authority over the spiritual intuition of others. We live this value by listening to each other, respecting each other, and allowing each one to be where he or she is. Again, in my experience on this spiritual path, which began in 2004, April of 2004, so I'm about 9 years into it now, I have gone through what you could call different phases of awakening. You know, if you were to go back and look at what I was going through and how I saw and what I thought and what I believed in 2004 and then 2006 and then 2008, you're going to see a change. And many of the things that I believed, many of the things that I practiced are not at all a part of my experience now. You know, it's like when I've used the experience before of when you're on monkey bars. You know, you have to grab a hold of that first monkey bar, swing over, grab the second one, but then you have to let go of the first one in order to then grab the third one, let go of the third one to grab onto the fourth one, etc. So as you're going across the monkey bars of awakening, there are many different stages you may go through, but you don't keep them, right? You at some point let go of them and you seem to move to another stage as your awakening is happening. But how would you have ever gotten to that fifth monkey bar if you hadn't grabbed on to the first one when you were supposed to? Well, I know that you all are aware is that sometimes what happens is now that some of us still with our egos intact somehow are around the fifth or sixth monkey bar. What sometimes happens when we look back and somebody is expressing something that's very clear to them on the first monkey bar, sometimes those of us on the fifth or sixth monkey bar have to tell them how wrong they are, or how elementary that is, or how much more there is to see. I don't think that's at all helpful. When I was on the first monkey bar, I needed to be on the first monkey bar, and I needed to be there fully. That's how I got to the second monkey bar. So I see an organization that understands, or an assembly that understands, even though there's only one truth. In this awakening process, we can be in different places at different times. Even A Course in Miracles, the manual for teachers, talks about this. Some can appear to be ahead, further along on the monkey bars than others. I see an assembly of people where we understand that everybody needs to be right where they're at, and where we do not allow our own egos to convince us that we're superior because we're a little further along on the monkey bar, and then start telling people they shouldn't be where they are. I just really feel that we should support people exactly where they're at. You know, my very first realization came one day. It was the very first one I ever had. It may be completely elementary compared to some of the realizations I've had since then, but I needed to have that first one. And I also, if I'd had people around me, I was actually completely alone then, but if I'd had people around me, I would have enjoyed them celebrating my first realization with me rather than telling me how elementary it was and I didn't see anything yet. So again, the second core value is we realize everyone is equal and no one has been given spiritual intuition that is an authority over the spiritual intuition of others. We live this value by listening to each other, respecting each other, and allowing each one to be where he or she is. Another point that's within this particular value, of course, is that, you know, I do not see an assembly where there is one leader and everyone else is a follower. I don't see that at all. This is very much an assembly of equals. Everyone has inner guidance and everyone has inner spiritual authority, and everything is completely equal about it. No one is above another in spiritual intuition. All right, so going on to the third core value. We accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. Now, this would be a value that would, in particular, bind the people that choose to join this assembly. It's also a value that may cause some people to say, that's not the assembly for me. If some people really feel that the individual self is who I am, you know, the individual self is my truth. It's not true that the individual self is a false self. This may not be the assembly for them. This is an assembly for people who feel within themselves through their own spiritual intuition that the individual self, which is also called the ego, which is also called the false self or the imposter self, is not our truth. And therefore, we seek to let go of our belief that it is our truth so that we can realize our truth. And again, our truth would be non-dual, without beginning or end, absolutely changeless. And we're calling that one true self. But those are just words. As you know, there is no word to describe the truth of what we are. And so again, you know, we will all live this value in this assembly by, in our ways, practicing to let go of the belief in the individual self. But that doesn't mean that we're all practicing in the same way. Some people may be practicing to let go of the individual self through meditation, some through self-inquiry, some through forgiveness, some through a combination of those practices. But the purpose is the same. All right, so let's see. We're ready for core value number 4. We affirm one true self as the only truth. We live this value by embracing what is helpful on the path of awakening without idolizing any spiritual doctrine as truth. One mistake that has been made since the beginning of time is that something helpful is provided through someone who has some level of realization, whether it's complete enlightenment or not, but they have some degree of true wisdom. They share that wisdom, and somewhere people recognize the wisdom within themselves as well when they hear it. But then, instead of embracing the wisdom and learning from the wisdom and going within and continuing that path of awakening within themselves, they idolize the wisdom that they learned. This is what separates. And in fact, most of us, if not all of us, really to some degree are involved with the Course in Miracles community. And I know that we're aware that to some degree, this has already happened in the Course community in some places with some people. Yeah, Laura Blue, I'll let you know. Thank you for waiting. You know, sometimes the Course, for example, is held up as truth, that this book is the truth, and then everything else is compared to the Course. And if in any way it sounds different from the Course, even if just the symbols are different from the Course, that is seen as non-truth. This is the ego's way of making sure that any wisdom that was shared stops there, and that awakening doesn't continue. It's called fundamentalism, typically. And it's an extremely common error that's repeated over and over and over again. So the purpose of this value is really to say that fundamentalism is not a part of our assembly. We affirm that the one true self is the only truth, not anything that points to it. No book, no spoken wisdom is truth. Those are the fingers pointing at the moon, not the moon itself. We will each follow our inner guidance, and we will each embrace whatever we are being guided to embrace as helpful, just like you have to grab onto a monkey bar, right? But we will not idolize any spiritual doctrine as the truth, because it's not the truth. It's pointing toward the truth. And we're going to remain clear on that idea. And that actually helps us so that we don't separate into separate fundamentalist cliques and then begin, you know, debating and fighting and doing what's just gone on, you know, forever in this world, wherever wisdom has arisen. All right, the fifth and final core value. We accept all forms as temporary appearances permitted through enduring awareness of self. We live this value by honoring all appearances and all experiences while continually reflecting on changeless truth. Now, everyone knows the story of the Course of Miracles student who, when a co-worker's spouse or child dies, says something like, "Oh, don't worry, it's just an illusion." Also, most of us, to some degree, and sometimes maybe to a great degree, have experienced extreme confusion based on the teaching that the world is an illusion. That confusion comes from the ego. The teaching is fine and perfect and points toward truth, toward awakening. But the confusion comes from the ego. So this last core value is a core value to address our commitment not to fall for that confusion. This is a compassionate assembly. If someone's child dies or someone's spouse dies, we let them cry on our shoulder. We bake them a casserole. We, you know, do whatever is compassionate at the time. However, at the same time, this is not an assembly that is going to fall back into the story, back into the world. As we're cooking the casserole, as we're letting the person cry on our shoulder, we are also within ourselves remaining aware of changeless truth. We act in the world without believing the world. This reminds me of Jesus's statement in the Bible, very much to be in the world, but not of the world. And in fact, some of you are probably already aware of the fact that I have already planned a pilgrimage in November of this year to India. It's different than the pilgrimages I've done before because it's based on this last core value. We are going to go to India and we are going to volunteer for 2 weeks working in orphanages and with what they call near orphans, very, very poor, very, very poor children in India. But we're not going to go there with the old worldly viewpoint, oh, these poor kids, they need my help. That's not helpful. That's not helpful to us, and it's not helpful to them. We're going to go there, and we're going to stay focused on changeless reality. We're going to stay focused on awareness within ourselves as we do whatever we are asked to do in order to physically assist those children. And I hope to have more pilgrimages like this in the future. And I also hope that the people who join this assembly will be possibly volunteering in their local areas, doing whatever they feel called to do. I think it's time to get out of our chairs, go out into the world, and be helpful while staying focused on awareness. And if we can't, if we find that while we're being helpful, we're getting upset, we're getting caught up in the suffering, then it's time. Good night, Polly. Then it's time to practice forgiveness, to look at ourselves, to look at our own blocks to love's presence. Why can't I be the presence of love because of this belief in my mind? So those are the five core values, the purpose and the five core values. I do have something else to share. This, I haven't even gotten to what some of you may call the big news yet. I do have something much more important to share. So I'll take a few moments for questions, but I don't want to get so lost in the questions that I don't continue with this announcement. But right now, if there's any questions on the purpose or the core values, that's the limit of the questions at this time, please raise your hand or just type them on the board. You'll have to wait for the big announcement, Polly. If you have to go somewhere, somebody will tell you. Grrr. Okay, so it looks like I just get to continue then. All right, let's go back to the word church for a moment. I feel very much like there's no way that I can turn away from this guidance. I feel very much that it is a part of my job and the team of people that have now joined with me, so it's also their job. I'll introduce them in a moment. But a part of my job is to build this assembly so that it can get formal church status from the IRS. Now, the interesting thing is, I don't have any need for church status or any personal reasons for wanting to get church status. Normally, when people want to get church status, it's because they want to be able to get that 501c3 tax deductible status so that people can make donations and those donations will be tax deductible. I already have that. The Foundation for Holy Spirit is already a 501c3. There's an additional form, a small, simple form to be filled out that will convert the foundation to a church. And maybe there's a couple other really small benefits. I'm not even clear on what they are, to be honest. So I can't be interested in them. So gaining church status from the IRS has nothing to do with wanting anything. There's nothing to want. We already have 501c3 status. People in the United States of America can donate and their donations are tax deductible. So the question is, why are we going for church status? And as I was gathering the team, and people would ask that question, because I think almost everybody on the team had resistance to church. I don't think anybody was excited about the idea of church, not one of us. And so they would all ask that, and my answer just kept being, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And then one day, I think it's when I was explaining to our very last team member, I think when I was starting to tell him I don't know, it hit me. In order to become what's called a church, and by the way, you don't have to be Christian to get church status. You could be, a Jewish synagogue. You could be an Islamic temple. But the legal status in America is called church status. Okay, that's just what it's called because we came out of a Christian foundation. In order to get church status, there are a set of laws that you have to comply to. And what I noticed as we started, having ideas about what this assembly would look like, especially the organization of the assembly, what I realized is some of our ideas were immediately null and void because of the law. And some of the ideas we had to focus on because of the law. And what I found as we got about 2 months into it is that because we were trying to get church status, because that feels like the guidance to try and get church status, the law was guiding us in how we were organizing the organization. And what hit me was that the law was our guidance. If Holy Spirit can speak to us through anything, it can speak to us through the law. And most certainly, if we didn't have the law guiding us, we would have done something different because you could say our personal preferences were different. But because we felt that we needed to follow the law, we're doing it in a certain way. And the further we go into it, the more that I can see that the organization we are building is a much more helpful organization. It has the ability to be sustained over a long, long period of time because of the strength of the organization that's coming from us trying to follow the law. So what the team and I have now accepted is that the law is our guidance. We don't even know for sure if we will get this church status in the end. We could go, you know, spend a year, 2 years, trying our best to comply to all of these laws, go and apply, and they could tell us no. And right now, if that happens, I don't feel any loss whatsoever. Because I still think following the law is helping us to build the best organization we can build. So I'm excited to have the law guiding us, and I welcome the law. Now, one interesting thing about the law is that there have been other organizations who have applied for church status that were online organizations, and that's what we are. We're going to be an online assembly. And so far, every online organization that has applied for church status has been turned down. They've been denied. And one of the things we've been doing is we have been studying those court cases. And we're learning why they were turned down. And of course, the way that we are the way that we are designing this organization is so that you know, hopefully we won't be turned down for those same reasons, right? We're trying to learn from their mistakes. So maybe, I mean, there's the possibility that we will be the first online organization ever granted church status. I think that's a very strong possibility, actually. But now I'm getting to a point that you guys may be very interested in. So if you're like halfway paying attention, you might want to tune back in now. One of the primary reasons that everyone else has been turned down, all the other online organizations have been turned down for church status, is it's not really a law. It's more of a criteria or a test that the IRS applies. It's held up in court. The court says it's a good test. And so it's legal precedent, even though it's not law. And that test is called the associational test. And the other online organizations that have applied to be churches failed the associational test. Now, the associational test is basically a test that says the members of your organization must be able to directly associate with one another, and I think maybe even specifically at your services, because churches are required to have services. And the other online organizations were like radio broadcasts. In one case, they even had a lot of people listening. You know, I don't know if it's hundreds or what, but a lot of people listening. And, you know, the people all said, I consider this my church. But the court said, because you are listening and you are not able to associate with the other members, this does not qualify as a church. So far, the government has always considered the church a physical place of worship because of the association that happens. If you and I were to go into the same church building, we can say hi to each other before the service. We may not say a word during the service. We might just sit there and listen to our minister or our priest or whoever. But when the service is over, we can get up and associate again. So, in order for us to gain church status, one criteria that we need to meet is we need to have associational services. About the time that we discovered this, that we needed to have associational services, my phone rang. And the person on the other end of the phone was Dove, David Fishman. A couple years ago, there were a lot of people living here in Pueblo. Many of them have moved away since then. But a couple years ago, there were a lot of people. And Dove and I had talked about the possibility of one day bringing ACIM Gather to Pueblo as where it's hosted from, so that several different people could share the administration instead of Dove having to do it by himself all the time. Well, that was a couple years ago, and since then those people have mostly moved away. But Dove remembered that conversation. And he is feeling a need, I would say, I think within the year is what he told me. Possibly sooner, but I believe he told me within the year to step back from being the full-time administrator of ACIM Gather. So he remembered that conversation we had, and he called me, and he wanted to know if I still wanted to take ACIM Gather. My first thought was personal, and it was, hell no. Who'd want to do all that work? But my next thought was, I wanted to talk to Lynn Johnson, who wasn't on the team at that time, but I knew she spent a lot of time in Gather. And I wanted to talk to my other team members. At that time, the only team members I had were Jacqueline Eckert and Tom Conway. And after talking to Lynn, Jacqueline, and Tom, we realized that we think that with ACIM Gather, we can meet that associational test. And so we accepted Dove's offer. So a part of the announcement that I wanted to make sure everybody heard, because I know ACIM Gather is important to all of you, I wanted to let you know that ACIM Gather is going to join Awakening Together. And at some point, it will no longer be called ACIM Gather for A Course in Miracles, because you have seen the values, the core values and the purpose of Awakening Together. And I'm sure it's very easy for you to see that the room name, ACIM, A Course in Miracles, isn't really appropriate. But already this room has gone far beyond ACIM. For years, people have been teaching the same wisdom through different forms. We've had Way of Mastery, NTI, A Course of Love. Who's that guy in Sedona? Somebody help me, the guy in Sedona they taught here on Thursday nights. We've had Advaita Vedanta teachers in here. David Hawkins, yes, David Hawkins, thank you very much. I'm sure much more than even I'm aware of. Brent Haskell, although he's physically in the room right now, and he's never been here before. We know that the Kelly Love reading of Brent Haskell's books have been here in the room. Wisdom is recognized in this room already from multiple sources. Your wisdom. You know, the other night, just two nights ago, Tom Conway came in here and taught his wisdom as it comes through him. So, Ramana Maharshi, Srinivasa Gadada Maharaj, Robert Adams, what else? I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that is already taught in this room, and yet we recognize it as one wisdom. Not only that, what really struck me as I contemplated this longer is we already are an associational community. I mean, look at us. We're like a family. We already are this assembly. It exists. It's simply not formalized. Yes, Joe Goldsmith is another one. Thank you. It's not formalized, but it already exists. And later, as I thought about it longer, things hit me kind of slowly. I realized that if this guidance hadn't come, it's possible that within a few years, ACIM Gather might have just faded away. If Dove is going to be unable to do it as a full-time job, maybe a couple other people would have said, yes, we'll do it. But without something formal to hold those commitments together, maybe, nobody knows this for sure, but maybe at some point it would have just fallen to the side. And look how valuable this room is. Look how many of us come in here and teach or share, whichever word you prefer. But because we teach and share here, we become more and more in touch with our own inner wisdom. The voice becomes more and more clear. because we're extending it, because we're sharing it in ACIM Gather. This room is important to us as a family. This room is important to us as participants of awakening. And so to give it a formal foundation that will allow it to continue to exist in Pal Talk and maybe someday even in some other, you know, some other technological form, but still the same purpose, right? For as long as it's helpful, that's a wonderful thing for all of us. At least I think it is. So not only did I want to come here tonight and let you know about Awakening Together and let you know about the purpose and the values of Awakening Together, but I wanted to let you know that ACIM Gather is going to be Awakening Together. And, you know, we don't know when yet. I can't give you a date, but definitely we will keep everyone informed. And in fact, one thing I'm going to do for anybody who wants to be checking for news, we are building an Awakening Together website, but it's just beginning. We're not at all ready to make that a public website. So for now, what I will do on my blog, reginadonacres.com, is I will create a category called Awakening Together, and I will share news with you by blogging the news in that category. And whenever you want to go and see what updates there are regarding what's happening with Awakening Together, just go to reginadonacres.com and select the Awakening Together category from the category drop-down arrow, and you'll be able to get the news. At some point, that will be moved over to Awakening Together. All right, I do have more to share, but that was the biggest piece of information I wanted to share. I wanted to make sure everybody knew about that because all of us are so interconnected through ACIM Gather. I wanted to make sure everyone knew that piece of news. That's important, I thought. Now, before I continue with more, does anybody have anything they want to share or say? If you want to take the mic, just, you know how to do it. Put up your hands. All right, Laura Blue, the mic is yours. Okay, same Laura Blue I've always known and loved. He has typed his question. I only remember you taking the mic like once or twice, Laura Blue, in 9 years, at least when I was in the room. Okay, here we go. Hi, all. I received this email from Regina, sent to all, to come here today and ask questions and give feedback. I know after asking these kinds of questions, usually what happens in the flow of accusations, but it is okay. So here are my 6 questions. I only have 5 core values. I'm teasing you. So 6 questions. How certain are you that this vision is not from your ego? All right, let me answer that question first. I'm very certain. And one way that I'm certain is from the resistance that I personally experienced when the guidance first came. In fact, here in the house, even while I was writing the purpose and writing the core values, what was also happening in the house was I was literally stomping around saying, I don't know if I want to do this. I just don't know if I want to do this. And that's because of the resistance I was feeling. And then one day, Danielle, who lives with me, said, Regina, I thought you didn't care what you wanted. And when she said that, I knew that my ego was what was in the way. And I knew that in order to follow this guidance, I had to put my ego aside. The second way that I know it's not from my ego, and this will become more clear to you as we move forward, but right now in the foundation for the Holy Spirit, I'm the central figure. NTI is the central book. If you go look at the Foundation for the Holy Spirit website, you'll see that the foundation was designed to teach the principles of A Course in Miracles and the writings of Regina Dawn Acres. That's what I'm giving up. I'm giving up being the central figure. I will be a leader as far as the organization goes. You know, I will be a leader. In fact, my title is President Minister, which we'll talk about. But I will not be a spiritual leader. Everyone who chooses to be a minister, and we'll talk more about how you can become a minister, everyone who chooses to be a minister is going to be equal. I do not have any strong decision-making authority. There's going to be a member board of trustees, 12 people, of which I will be one. We all have equal votes. That's so no one individual is running the organization with their personal preferences and their ego. And then in addition to that, there's a board of directors, 3 to 5 board of directors that will be above the member board that's making sure that all of the decisions the member board makes, they're making based on the assembly's purpose and core values. So there really isn't room for an ego in this organization, not really. And in fact, one thing my ego has been upset about as I've been writing the Constitution, my ego has screamed at me, "You're writing yourself right out of it. Like, this is your chance. This is your chance to elevate yourself." And I hear the ego screaming, I'm not listening to the ego. That's how I know it's not the ego. All right, because I can hear the ego's point of view. And okay, so according to what criteria do you measure this certainty? I think I answered that. Hope you do not answer by saying you do not have an ego. I don't think I said that. I do hear the ego. I'm just not listening to it. Okay, question number 2. Why is there a need for an organization church to begin with? Is not it the case that spirituality is about what is going on inside someone? Yeah, I don't really have an answer for that, Laura Blue. And the reason I don't have an answer is I don't feel this was my idea. In fact, I often tell people that's how you know it's guidance. If you can answer all the why are you doing this and what's the thought process behind it and where are you going to be in 5 years, your ego is probably involved. Guidance, often you just don't know why. You know, guidance doesn't show up with a why. I want you to do this and here's why. Guidance is just the prompt to do it. Okay, so that's it. I answered all 6 questions in 2. Okay, good. Jay, I see your hand is up, so I'm releasing the mic to you.
I just had a question about the ministerial aspect of it. You said you were going to go more into it. I didn't hear you talk about it before, so maybe it's just a moot point. So I guess that's the question. That's it.
Yeah, I'll just take that as my prompt to go into that next. How's that sound, Jay? Oh, Teddy has his hand up. I'll take Teddy, but Jay, I will come back. And when I formally start talking after the questions, I'll talk about the ministerial program next. Teddy? Teddy, did you want the mic?
Yeah, okay. Can you guys hear me? Okay. So I've been listening, and it's interesting because today I got this guidance about this whole new contemporary spirituality that will be the spirituality of integration rather than the integration of the spiritual. It would be the spirituality of integration in action rather than the integration of the spiritual. And as I see it, and having set up several churches, you know, I've done this before in the forum, it's much like an architect faces. When an architect goes to use non-conforming building materials within a system that it has already accepted conforming material. So what I'm saying is churches get approved because they have a physical church and people can come together. Okay. So we would have to prove that we have the same ability, but only in cyberspace. So if you had a dedicated server that operated 24/7, that was the location of the physical church, and the members of the church, the constituency of the church, actually proved their membership by paying the bills for the server itself. The server location would be a 24/7 church that could have many rooms like Gather all forms of discussion and meeting places, online classes. It would provide a physical location, an address for a church, and then you would just have to figure out how to take this new non-conforming structure and demonstrate that it meets the spirit of the law that allows the granting of the license based on the normal conforming church organization. So I don't think it's a problem at all. I don't think this is a problem at all. I think this is the most doable thing in the world. I think the only thing you're going to have to do is take it out of Gather, out of Pow Talk, and establish your own server, like a cyber church with the location that is where the server is. And I think we can get the legislation, we can craft the articles of faith and the organization so that the non-conforming form meets the spirit and the law of the old conforming regulation.
Yeah. Yeah, well, of course, that's exactly what our challenge is not being the physical church. And, you know, again, trying to be the first online community, assembly, organization, whatever you want to call it. And Teddy, I'm gonna take what you have said about the server under advisement with the team. That's the first time that idea has been presented to us. And so we will look at that. One thing that Lynn has been, in fact, let me go ahead and just introduce you to the team. Then I'll get to the ministerial program. Let me introduce you to the team. First of all, we do have a board of directors because it's the foundation board of directors. David Fishman is the chairman of the board. Phil Frisk is the director, secretary, treasurer. Norma Clark, who most of you do not know, she's more in the background. She's the vice chairperson of the board. So the three of them make up the board of directors, and they have to approve everything that the rest of us do, the rest of our team does. The team that we have right now has 7 members. I'm the president on the team, just as I was the president of the Foundation for the Holy Spirit. Jacqueline Eckert is our legal counsel. Tom Conway is responsible for writing our policies and procedures. Jay McCormick was the first person brought onto the team as our tech team, responsible for getting our website up and for doing the behind the scenes databases and things like that that needs to happen. And I guess you could say he's our lead person because our other person is unable to attend the meetings. So Jay is the one that always attends the meetings. Then he communicates with the other tech team member on the side. That other tech team member, however, is highly respected and very much needed. You guys will probably know him. That is Bruce Rawls. Lynn Johnson is responsible for the ACIM Gather Transition Project. She's responsible for that. And she's the project manager. And then Nikki Dobson and I are writing the ministerial ordination program. So that's the team that we have right now. One decision I made at the very beginning was that the team would be limited to the number of open positions. Just like if you're paying people, you don't have more people on your staff than you do jobs because, you know, then you're just paying a bunch of people to do nothing. Well, we aren't paying people, but it still seemed to make good sense to only have enough people on the team to do the jobs and not to have extra people who don't have jobs and aren't actively involved, but just have opinions. So if new jobs open up on the team, we may be looking for people with the appropriate skills to join the team. But right now, 7 is all that we need on this team, and that's what we have. However, we will be sharing information with you, and we are willing to listen to your ideas. You can email me with any idea or thought. But that's the team of 7. All right, so let's get to the ministerial ordination program. I see that Barbara Siegel is, why are you having a ministerial program? First of all, if you're following guidance to start a church, there's a form that you have to fill out in order to apply for church status. And when you fill out that form, there's a number of questions that you're going to be asked. And it's by how you answer those questions that the IRS determines whether you are a church or not. Some of those things we know we're not going to do. For example, one of the questions is, you know, do you have a school for children? And we know that we're not going to do that because we're not in the business of indoctrinating people from birth on how to think. If people join our assembly, it's because that inner calling arises within them on their own at whatever age. But we're not going to go out and indoctrinate people on how to think. So we don't have a school for children. We're not going to be teaching people from age 2, here's how we want you to think. Another one of the questions is, are your members allowed to have a membership in another church? And typically what the IRS expects you to say is no. If you're a church, they expect your members to be a member of your church only. In our case, we feel that our members may have a reason for wanting to be a member of this assembly and another church as well. So we have no intention of restricting your membership to just this organization. So we know there's a couple of these questions that because our guidance, our conscience says so, we're not going to be answering in a favorably way, in the way that the IRS usually wants to see the answer. So one of the things we have decided to do is we're going to try and answer, you could say, the right way, the way you're expected to answer on as many of them as you can, right? One of the other questions they ask about is, do you have a ministerial program? To be honest, seeing the question on the form is what prompted the idea, all right? As we go, so like I said, the law is the guidance. As we go through the law, we're building the structure, the invisible structure, to be the structure the law expects to see as much as possible. But then, as we looked at the idea about having a ministerial program, we found out there's another reason for doing it also. And the second reason I'm actually more bought into. We want to make sure that the discernment that is taught in this organization or formally taught within the assembly is true discernment. It would be that discernment, that wisdom that we all recognize in A Course in Miracles, in NTI, in Advaita Vedanta, in Buddhism, in Joel Goldsmith, and, you know, it comes up in a number of places. But there's also a lot of thought out there that is similar to this wisdom that is not the same. One example, a recent example from history, it's now a moot point, but I'll still use it as my example. When 2012 was coming up the pipes, people had a lot of beliefs about 2012. And those beliefs varied greatly. Some people believed that everybody would spontaneously awake in 2012. Some people thought that it was just going to be this horrible year of destruction, almost like the end of the world. I mean, the beliefs vary differently, and there are lots of books on the point. And some of the people within our spiritual community believe that 2012 was a true spiritual phenomena or true spiritual thing that was going to happen. There's actually discernment that is very easy to learn that helps you see the difference between what is true and what is not true. Truth is changeless. It has no beginning and no ending. This 2012 phenomena was about nothing but change. Even if it had occurred, which it didn't, but even if it had occurred, it was still change. It was not a true spiritual phenomena. It was not a spiritual truth. So a part of what we want to do is we want to help people who are really who really want to say, you know, I'm a teacher in this organization. We want to help ensure that everyone is sharing the same discernment regardless of the spiritual path, regardless of whether it's coming out of Ramana Maharshi, Srinivasagadatta Maharaj, A Course in Miracles, Brent Haskell's books. So, the ministerial ordination program is going to teach these basics of true discernment that is consistent within all of these different forms. And the things that appear different are not going to be taught. I don't know how to say that. We're looking for the consistent wisdom. And when someone goes through the ministerial ordination program and becomes a minister, that means this is someone who is clear on discernment. They're clear. You're not going to find this person getting confused about the idea that aliens coming is a spiritual truth. They're going to know the difference between story, change, temporary appearance, and truth. So the ministerial ordination program is really a course in true discernment. And it's not going to teach any specific form. In fact, we will draw from many, many, many forms in the curriculum. As I mentioned, Nikki and I are writing it, but the entire team has to approve it. So we're going to have 7 different people. You could even say with multiple spiritual preferences, all agreeing that this course teaches the core true discernment that is a part of this organization or a part of this assembly. Now, when it comes to ACIM Gather, there's not going to be a lot of change here. Just like now, anyone who feels to come and teach will be invited to come and teach. You don't even have to be a member of Awakening Together. So in that way, there's not going to be any change. We are required to have some worship services, as they're called, legally. So we will have a couple of hours set aside during the week that we will call services. And those services have to be taught by a minister. Again, the law dictates all of this, and we're using the law as guidance. So when it's one of those few hours in the week that is called a service, you're going to find a minister teaching. But the rest of the time in Gather, you're not going to find any significant change. Nobody has to be a minister to teach in Gather. In fact, I would expect the only people that would become ministers of Awakening Together are those who feel a calling to become a minister of Awakening Together. But there is no limit to the number of people that can become ministers. If every single person wants to be a minister, every single person can be a minister. Because again, we're an assembly of equals. So the purpose of minister is not to rise some above the others. It's a matter of personal guidance. Okay, so here's a great question Barbara's asking. So if you are a minister, as she is, from Pathways of Light, do you still need to go through the program? And the answer to that is yes. And the reason for that, again, there's lots of laws that are guiding us. When you are a minister, you are not just a minister. You're a minister of the church that you got your ordination from. So if you're a if you got your ordination from Community Miracle Center, you are a CMC minister, not a Unity minister. If you're getting your ordination from Unity, you're a Unity minister, not a Pathways of Light minister. If you want to become a minister of another organization, another church, you do have to go through their ministerial ordination program as well. And this, again, is expected by the law. There are certain states that would not recognize your ordination if you did not have to go through the program. In addition to that, although a Pathways of Light minister probably has the exact same discernment we're talking about, if we start making exceptions, there may be someone who wants to come who's a Baptist minister or a something else, and maybe their discernment is completely different, and now they don't need to go through our discernment course, right? The discernment course is going to ensure consistency. Every single minister will have gone through the discernment course. Also, just to let you know, the law does expect people to pay fees for a ministerial ordination program. And there are states who will not recognize your ordination if you didn't pay for it. However, it is our intention to keep those fees absolutely reasonable, probably much more reasonable than even Pathways of Light, maybe. I mean, I think I've heard their prices, and I think they're higher than what we're looking at. But you will have to pay because the law dictates it. One thing that's really easy for us is we're not really having to think that much because the law is guiding us. All we're having to do is become familiar with the laws, and then we see, oh, that's what we have to do then. That's what we have to do then. And again, no, we do not need to follow the law to get 501c3 because I already have 501c3. We're following the law because that's our guidance. Period. No other reason. We have no personal reasons for wanting to become a church. None. Zero. Nobody on the team has a personal reason for wanting to become a church. But the law is guiding us in such a perfect way. This organization, when it is done, it's going to have policies and procedures in place because the law requires it. So when a circumstance comes up, that circumstance isn't going to be handled on an individual basis with egos involved. You just look at the policy and procedure and it tells you how to handle the circumstance. Everything is impersonal. All the policies and procedures are being written before any situations arise, so it has nothing to do with personalities. Again, I wasn't bought into this when it started, but as I'm watching it unfold, I'm realizing how perfect the guidance is that we follow this law. It makes everything easy. It makes everything clear. No individual preferences or ruling. We're just doing what we have to do. Let's see. Let me look and see if there's anything else that I need to. There's a lot more to it, obviously. But I'm trying to think if there's anything that you need to know. Team members, if there's anything that you can think of that we need to tell people right now, let me know. Right now I'm looking to see if there's anything and nothing is jumping out at me. Jay has his hand up. Jay, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, just some interesting things. Can you guys hear me, first of all?
Yes.
Can you guys hear me? Can you guys hear me or no? Anybody?
Yeah.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Everybody's typing yes. He must be locked up. Okay, let me take the mic and tell him. Jay, we could hear you just fine. I think maybe you're locked up if you didn't see their yeses. Everybody's typing yes, but we can hear you. I don't know if you want to go out and come back in or if you just want to take the mic again since we heard you fine. Go ahead.
Just some quick announcements. Just to follow up on what Gina was saying, there's some really amazing things that we're going to do with the website, one of which is to provide one-click access to get into what will be the Awakening Together room and a variety of other services, articles, and levels. The website will be quite a wonderful portal for connecting, associating with each other, information, knowledge, wisdom. I just wanted to throw that out there. That's really going to be a growing center of connection online and in many ways the hub of a lot of what is going on, if that's a correct statement. Regina, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I didn't hear anything wrong, Jay. But actually, I was trying to scan the comments. So I don't know if I honestly heard everything you said. I apologize. I thought I would take the opportunity while you were speaking because I trust you to try and scan the comments and see if there's anything I didn't see that I needed to address. I apologize. let's see. Lynn, please take the mic.
Okay, I don't know if you saw the comment that I'm after this. I'm after you. So we can continue the conversation as long as people want to continue the conversation. The second thing being that yes, at this time, we will continue to use PalTalk as our main mode of communication. And, you know, we are looking at other services and, you know, just looking for other ways that we can come together and communicate. And we've looked at certain things like Google Hangouts or, you know, Twitter. I mean, there's lots and lots of things out there in the ether that are ways for people to join together. So, but for the answer to most of, your questions right now about, PalTalk, we will continue to use PalTalk. And, you know, right now it seems to be a service that appears to be working very well as far as communication goes, from the chatter on the board and the, amount of discussion and comments that we're getting. Anyway, just to let you all know that. And I see that Tom has his hand up. And so I will turn the mic over to you, Tom.
Okay. Thanks, Lynn. I just wanted to make the point. I don't know if it was raised, but that this is not a rushed. This is not a rushed. Let me try to adjust this. Okay, there we go. Okay, I think that should be better. I just wanted to that we're not rushing this in any way. It's not to try to get this accomplished in any time frame. This is going to be done in a patient and procedural manner, and that, you know, if you don't see things happening right away, it's just because it's a patient process, and there's perhaps a lot of hoops that we're going to have to jump through, and we want to do this in the right way. Thanks. Back to you, Regina.
Yeah, that was a great point, Tom. In fact, I have a theme song, a theme song that just, again, is running in my mind. It kind of showed up on its own, but some of y'all will know this song. It's from Brother Sun, Sister Moon. And it's that song where what's the name of the song? It's Stone by Stone. In fact, you know what? I have it right here. It's a little long, so I'm not going to play all of it, but let me just play a little bit of the song for you, Stone by Stone. It's when St. Francis was rebuilding that old church out in the meadow. You may even remember the scene where one of his buddies comes to see what he's doing, and he sees St. Francis putting a stone on the wall, but then he turns and he checks with a woman who's watching, and she kind of signals with her head that it needs to go a little to the left. He moves it a little to the left and looks again, and she says, yep, that's perfect, and then he cements it in. And that's the way the team is working. So, for example, even though Nikki and I are writing the ministerial ordination program, we take it back to the team, and we get the team's nod, yes, you're doing it right, or no, this needs to be changed a little. Even though Jay and Bruce are working on the website, you know, they bring the designs to us, and we say, yes, that's right, or no, it needs to be shifted a little. And we're really working together so that we're all in agreement about what happens. We're taking it slowly. We also need to wait for guidance or unfolding on things. We don't know what we don't know, and we accept that because we're not returning to our old business modes of setting objectives, setting timelines, and planning this out. We're following guidance. And it's kind of interesting for us because most of us, or many of us, are from business backgrounds. I know that Nikki expressed a little bit of discomfort. I expressed a little bit of discomfort because it was like being thrown back into our old work roles. But we realized even though we were being thrown back into our old work roles, it doesn't have to be the way it's always been. It can be done differently now. It can be done with guidance. So we're not following the world's rules on how to build an organization. We're doing it slowly, stone by stone, in consensus agreement, and with guidance. So here's a little bit of that song. Let me play that for you.
If you want your dream to be, build it slow and surely. Small beginning, greater end, heartfelt work grows purely. If you want to live life free, take your time, go slowly. Do few things, but do them well. Simple joys are holy. Day by day, stone by stone, build your secret slowly. Day by day, you'll grow too. You'll know heaven's glory. If you want your dream to be, build it slow and surely. Small beginning, greater end. Heartfelt work grows purely.
Okay, so that's the song I was talking about. That's the song that plays in my mind as guidance on how we're doing this. And I've shared that with the team as well, so everybody knows. Stone by stone, we need guidance. We need to be in agreement. We don't know until we don't know. We're not planning far ahead. We're staying right where we're at. We're being in the moment. We're on this step now, and that's how it's happening. So let's see. Popsicle, go ahead, take the mic.
Good evening, everyone. I hope that you can hear me. Can I have a yes or one or anything? Oh, well, too many people to mention by name, but it's nice to see you all. There seems to be an undercurrent going on, and I would like to kind of respond to that in a way. Yes, it's me, sweet. perhaps it will endure. Perhaps it will splinter. Perhaps it will go the way the things of this world. Perhaps a thousand different things may happen. But perhaps, Lord, it can be allowed to exist as an idea or as a fully developed thingy. Church or assembly later on. Perhaps we should just let it be. That's really all I got to say. Thank you.
Yeah, that was lovely. Thank you. And in fact, I want to read something that I got in email. As you all, most of you know, I sent out an announcement yesterday letting people know that I would be announcing this today. I received more response to this particular email than any email I've ever sent out. And at least the response I got was 100% favorable. Many people said in like a one sentence way that they've been feeling this, they've been wanting this. And I said in the email that I know this is not my idea. This is coming from the whole. And I do know that. Like I said, I received the vision. I didn't make up the vision. There's a big difference. But I got one particular email, which I thought expressed it so beautifully. I want to read it to you. This is from Barbara Siegel, who at least was in the room. She's still in the room. Yep. So let me read to you what she wrote. Let me change my glasses, though. I need different glasses for reading than I do for looking at the computer screen. Here we go. She says, "It gave me chills to read your thoughts about organizing this new foundation, as I have had the same feelings as you expressed, that all of this wonderful spiritual teaching and wisdom that is coming forth now can be integrated. I have been feeling very empowered by this realization, and it is so freeing. I attend classes with my dear teacher, Rabbi Michael Shapiro, and listen to Muji, Abraham, you, dear Regina, and others. Each brings me deeper understanding, perhaps a word that clarifies what, up until then, seemed a little foggy. It is wonderful. It is like being at a beautiful buffet and picking what seems best to you at the time. But all is wholesome, all is nourishing, and all complements the other. I heard Muji say to a very, very young woman who was questioning him as to who she should follow, something that in effect said she shouldn't choose. He said it with great love and warmth, of course, but gave such a cute example. Again, I can't remember his exact words, but the idea he was presenting to her was, what if Jesus was standing right in front of you, offering to answer your questions, and you said, 'No, I'm waiting for the Buddha.' Anyway, Regina, I would like to be a part of this foundation. I have plenty of time to help. I will teach. I will do counseling. I would love to help with the organization in any way that I can." And she said that she's available. But I feel strongly that the reason this assembly is coming together now is because so many of us feel in our hearts what she's expressing. And the truth is, if we wanted to join a church, if we wanted to join some type of an assembly, we would have difficulty finding an assembly that allowed us to follow our inner guidance and that shared, but yet shared this same one true wisdom. It doesn't exist. Not exactly right. There are things that are similar, but not exactly right. In addition to that, we could not be together if we had to join these local, brick and mortar buildings. And we are an assembly. All this is who we already are as far as where we are in our awakening process. This is nothing new. But what's happening is, for some reason, it's being formalized. And again, it's not my idea. It came to me, and I know it came to me because so many people are ready for it. It seems like there was something else I wanted to share, but somewhere I lost it along the way. So. So I guess not. There's just so much information. There's information about what it means to be a member. You know, there's information about, how will the member board be formed? You know, like the membership gets to vote for who's on the member board. I mean, there's all kinds of information. And there's going to be more coming as we form this organization based on the laws and providing the packet of information that we'll have to provide to the IRS when we apply. So again, there'll be more information coming out, and I'll keep everyone informed on my blog on an Awakening Together category. And you all are welcome to go and read that at any time. Let me just read to you a little bit of the copy that we're planning to put on our homepage. This will give you a little bit more of an idea. I'm probably going to close in a little bit, but let me just read this copy to you, this content, as Jay calls it. Hold on just one moment. All right, so this is going to be maybe not our homepage, but it'll probably be like an About Us page. The introduction says, There is consistent wisdom in the universe. It shows up in all religions, in philosophy, in all cultures, and throughout time. This wisdom is not unique or new. It is owned by no one and by no organization. Now, some of this may change a little bit because we're still in draft mode. There is nothing special about it. No one has to go to a special place or special teacher to find it. It is the most abundant wisdom in the universe. Once one opens his or her heart to this wisdom, it appears everywhere by the hand of universal grace. There is also a way of not seeing universal wisdom. We all have the ability to be distracted from it by self-limiting and segmenting beliefs. What is Awakening Together? Awakening Together is an online universal assembly of peers dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom, regardless of the form in which it appears. We are also dedicated to recognizing the ways we deny universal wisdom by adopting personal beliefs and biases. We want to recognize these limitations so we can free ourselves from them and open to the continuous flow of universal wisdom. And we do have another page where we list just some examples of wisdom that we may be interested in. Some of the examples we have listed are the Bhagavad Gita, the Tao Te Ching, the Gautama Buddha, Rumi, Kabbalah, Christian mystics, A Course in Miracles, NTI, Sri Ramana Maharshi, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, Peace Pilgrim, J. Krishnamurti, Papaji, Adyashanti, Eckhart Tolle, Byron Katie, and more. But then we also state, although teachers and scripture are helpful as we awaken to universal truth, absolute clarity always arises within oneself. For that reason, we encourage the unique expression of wisdom as it comes through our ministers, members, and friends. A friend is any person who's in association with us who chose not to be a member. In other words, everyone is a friend. So I guess that's it. That's it. That's it for now, I think. And yeah, I see Kathy says Mary Perrone has been talking about something like this. I think that this is happening now because the truth is we're ready for this to happen now as a group, as a whole. I know there are people. I did see that Laura Blue was expressing a bit of upset. He wants things to stay A Course in Miracles. And I'm certain that not everyone will feel that this is for them. And that's okay too. You know, that's okay too. Oh, shoot. I just saw Laurent Ellie Levy for a second. He popped in and popped right back out. Y'all remember him, right? you know, that's okay too. That's okay too. If people want to be attached to A Course in Miracles and want nothing but A Course in Miracles, you know, that's fine. But for many of us, what we seek is wisdom, and we want to see that wisdom, and we no longer want to be focused on form. We're moving away from being focused on form, and that's what this assembly is about. And actually, I'm done now. So does anybody else have anything they want to say or share or ask before I let go of the mic and go upstairs to be with my family?